Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our guest today is Seth Diamond, Executive Deputy Commissioner of New York City's Family Independence Administration. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Stuart Vansky. Seth, we've talked about and alluded to the current economic downturn. Higher applications, increasing caseloads, and the axiom doing more with less, budget reductions. What have you been doing to respond to that? And do you see signs of a turnaround?
Well, we certainly have felt the effects of it, as I said, particularly on the food stamp program where you've seen the caseloads gone up. Last month, I think we had an increase of over 20,000 people in 1 month just on food stamps, and that has not been atypical. A lot of months we've added 20,000, 15 or 20,000 individuals to the food stamp roll. So it clearly is an effect, in part, the downturn in the economy. I think some of it is also the access initiatives that we've implemented have made the system more open and available to people. But a lot of it is also motivated by people who have great economic difficulty. So we're dealing with tremendous demands for our services at a time when our resources are also greatly stretched. And so that creates a challenge. And we've used technology to some extent, I think, to help us a bit. We've been able, particularly on the food stamp program, which had not had a significant investment of technology before this, to be able to do things like create electronic case records, to be able to do more online interviewing and direct data entry of information into the system rather than have a client fill out an application and have it be data entered two or three times after that to get into the system. It can go now directly into the system. We use this integrated voice response system that I mentioned a few minutes ago to talk about the recertification process. That creates an opportunity to greatly reduce the need for workers to get involved. And we've tried to use mail and other kinds of non-sort of advanced technology, but other approaches which reduce our workload needs. So we're always trying to look for ways to shave a little bit off the time that it takes to do things or the investment of people that we have to make. Everyone looks to technology for a way to do that. Sometimes it can help. Sometimes it brings with it other issues that you have to deal with. But it is a struggle. I don't think that anybody would say that it isn't difficult.
You mentioned some of the persistent barriers that the folks you serve are dealing with, including medical issues, mental health issues, and substance abuse issues. Can you explain how the HRA's Wellness Assessment, Rehabilitation, and Employment Program, the WeCare program, seeks to ameliorate these barriers and walk us through how it works?
Sure. WeCare is a program that was created 4 or 5 years ago that is really an essential part of our overall service mix. One of the things that was missing when we, in the pre-WeCare era, was a program for people who had significant mental and medical health barriers to employment. So we had services for the most able, but not for the ones with the greatest barriers. With the implementation with WeCare, I really feel like we can serve the entire spectrum of the population. And I think that's something that New York City was ahead of the nation in, and I'm very proud that we were able to do that so early. And it has helped us as the federal legislation has made it increasingly more difficult to achieve participation rates. A lot of other states and cities have been sort of surprised that they actually have to develop programs. But in New York City, one of the things that we're happy about and in some ways glad that there is the federal pressure to reach these high rates is that it creates a demand to have a program that serves the entire population. You can't just skate by with serving a narrow segment. You now have to have a program for everyone. So WeCare has two sort of basic components. One is almost an integrity component, which is to verify that people who claim medical and mental health barriers truly have those barriers. We found, particularly in the pre-welfare reform era, that a lot of people who said they had health issues and we allowed them to substantiate that with doctor's notes, the doctor's notes either were sort of conclusory or were not always honest, unfortunately. And you also put the worker in a very difficult position who's not a medical professional of trying to judge some type of information that's been submitted by a medical professional. So WeCare is a program that takes that off the worker's shoulders, ensures consistency throughout the system, and does a professional and comprehensive evaluation of somebody who claims they can't work. That's the upfront piece. So when people come to the job centers, if they say they can't work for a medical or mental health issue, the interview is sort of suspended at that point for purposes of employment, and they're sent to WeCare for the evaluation. at the end of the We Care evaluation, you do have some people who are found to have significant disabilities, and those people we don't think are going to be able to go to work, and we want to work with them to get on federal benefits, SSI. Other people may have a temporary medical condition, maybe a serious heart ailment or uncontrolled diabetes, that they could work if they can get their condition under control. They go into a component of the program called wellness, which is sort of a managed rehabilitation. They are given a prescription of appointments and doctor's visits and things like that they need to keep. And our expectation is at the end of 3 months, they'll be able to engage in work activities. Then there's another component of the program, or another result of the evaluation could be that people are what's called limited employable, which means they have some limitations to their employment, but they are able to go to work in the right setting, one that accommodates their limitations. And then there's the fourth group is people who are fully employable. They came in and after the evaluation, we don't think that they really have any medical issues or any significant medical issues. What was innovative about WeCare was that we didn't stop there, though. We did the evaluation, and there's a medical evaluation that takes place in some places in the country. And in fact, New York City had something like this before. But we married that part with the obligation of the same vendor who's doing the evaluation to now get people jobs, if that's what the outcome is, the people who have limited employment opportunities. Because what we had found in the past was when we had a medical contractor who just did an evaluation and then they were sent back to the agency or referral to another employment program, they would go to that employment program, claim another medical issue, they would go back for a review. It was a circle that never ended for people, and it wasted everybody's time and, of course, tremendous taxpayer money. So now by giving the same vendor the obligation to do the review and get people the job, you put one contractor, you hold them accountable for the results, for doing the review and helping to get people jobs. And I think it also gives the review a more employment focus, because the contract is structured in a complex way in terms of evaluation, but clearly the best result for the contractor is to move people into employment. So they know that that's their focus.
What has been the response of community providers and mental health clinics, other health providers in this New York City to the WeCare program?
Well, I think initially there was skepticism about what we were doing, that we were going to do it in a good and fair and comprehensive way. But I think they've seen that it really is done in a very professional way. The tool that they use to evaluate people, the biopsychosocial exam that they utilize, is a very comprehensive, intensive exam. It's not a 5-minute kind of quick, you know, deal, but it's a really intensive process that looks not only at medical and mental health issues, but also social service needs that you might have. And I think people have embraced the program and that part of the evaluation and understood that it is being done the correct way. I think some people still feel that people who are going through that process are being asked to do things that they shouldn't and that it's not appropriate to ask people to go to work. But I think that most people, even in the program, would feel that if they are in the right setting and they could go to work, they want to go to work. And we think we should be providing that opportunity.
So the mission of your organization is to move people off welfare into work,
correct,
into employment. I'd like to delve into two programs under your portfolio that help folks do that, and that is the Back to Work program and the Begin program, Begin Employment, Gain Independence Now program. Could you tell us a little bit about these programs? What makes them unique?
Well, Back to Work is our program for people with the fewest barriers to employment. They are people who do not have significant medical or mental health or literacy or other kinds of needs or substance abuse needs would typically be referred to Back to Work. And it is a very important part of our program in that it maintains the upfront message about getting people to work, because applicants, when they apply for welfare, usually their first stop in the employment process is with a back-to-work vendor. And during the upfront period, which is either a month or 45 days, where we're evaluating their application, they're required to participate in an employment program that the back-to-work vendors run. And the back-to-work vendors have a sense of urgency about getting people jobs because, again, they're only paid if people do get jobs. So sending people right away to an employment program, requiring that they be there full-time, and having a vendor that is strongly focused on getting people into work ensures that you have a good core message right right up front from when people apply. We also, as I think I said earlier, the back-to-work renders have offices in each of the job centers so they can see people and right away. Back-to-work does continue for people who are not able to get a job during the application period on a more part-time basis because it's combined with other activities. So one of the things that we've implemented recently is that people start as applicants with an employment vendor, but then they continue with that same vendor if they're not able to get a job during the application period. They move typically to a program where they're in work experience 3 days a week and they're at the back-to-work vendor 2 days a week, and it maintains a full schedule. The most unique thing about the back-to-work vendors is probably, as I said, the payment structure. I think a lot of places talk about performance-based contracting, but it's the real deal here, and that it's nearly 100%. The vendors take a tremendous risk. I have great respect for what they do and their ability and willingness to continue to do it. And luckily for us, they've been very successful. But I think the performance-based nature of the payments keeps them focused on what we think is important. Begin is a program for people with literacy needs, particularly people who read below the sixth grade level. But it has a range of programs from people with an ABE, adult basic education, people who don't speak English well at all the way up to GED programs. And then they run some vocational training programs focused on low literacy. And it's been a combination, begin is structured to be a combination of 2 days a week in the classroom and 3 days a week in contextualized work experience where you reinforce what's been done in the classroom. It's been very successful. One of the things that people criticized welfare reform and education programs is that you were sacrificing education for the needs of work, and Begin has shown that you can combine the two and be successful at both.
So program effectiveness is critical. How do you use all the performance information that you collect and manage and track to inform decisions?
Well, that's a major challenge, and one of the things that you find in a large organization with HRA with a number of talented people who are working in the data area and the computer area is that you can easily be overwhelmed by the statistics, and trying to be able to focus on a manageable number of indicators that can tell you what you need to do is difficult. We have the benefit in the welfare reform period, of course, of, I think, the job placements being the overwhelming indicator. And that's not the only indicator. There are other service indicators that are important, but the importance of that one can't be underestimated because that we recognize we need to be successful at. If we're not successful there, even if we're doing other things well, we're not doing what we think is our mission. So that certainly helps. But we do a process each year of reviewing what are our top concerns and indicators, and then developing a report card for not only each of our offices, but for our employment vendors also, that we use in a process called JobSat or VendorStat, and we send out to each of the vendors each month so they're evaluated not only on how they're doing, but against their competitors, or in the case of the vendors, and in the case of the job centers, against other offices. So everybody has a sense of how they're doing on the key indicators that we believe are important to success.
What does the future hold for New York City's Family and Dependents Administration? We will ask Seth Diamond, Executive Deputy Commissioner at FIA, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.